Good morning, Kevin. I see your mic's clear as well as Mr. Arundel's. Good morning to you both.
And good morning. Good morning, Dennis.
Hi. Now, the OECD and the EU, two international agencies with which we seem to be having an ongoing battle. Looking over a period of time, the former Prime Minister, the late Prime Minister Owen Arthur, had a fight with the OECD. The Attorney General made reference to a continuing fight with the OECD sometime in August of last year in connection with the Financial Action Task Force and or compliance or lack thereof with certain issues. And then we have this current fight with the OECD and blacklisting by the EU. The first thing I'd like you to do for those listening is explain what is our relationship with these entities, why we are part of it, and why it's important for us to have these good relations or these good ratings with these various agencies.
Okay, Dennis. Thank you very much for that question. Good morning, Dennis. Firstly, the EU is not an international agency. The EU is a bloc of countries in Europe, and they have taken it upon themselves to join international agencies and to more or less act as a world police as it relates to certain issues such as anti-money laundering and issues such as tax and tax good governance, just to name two of them. In relation to the OECD, for those persons who may be listening and not be aware, the OECD stands for the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Mm-hmm. And that agency has been sanctioned by the G20 countries to ensure that there is fair taxation across the world. And so that is broken up into several different agencies with different responsibilities. Barbados obviously has been a country that has always been known for and prides itself on being compliant. And therefore, we are involved in the OECD and we are involved in an arm of the OECD, which is relevant to this matter, called the Global Forum. We are part of that. We are in no way a part of the EU. We do not have a seat at the EU table. We do not engage in any discussions in the EU Council or the different groupings that get together to form these discussions, unlike the OECD, where we do have a seat, where we are participatory, and where we do have a vote. I don't know if Ben wants to weigh in on that as well.
Mr. Arundel?
No, I fully agree with Mr. Hunt's comments. But I think also, looking at it from an EU perspective, they're a trading bloc. They've introduced certain rules within the EU to avoid tax competition amongst member states of the EU. So they have a bit of a challenge to try to ensure that countries conform to those rules. And in order to be able to do that, they feel that they have to also impose those rules on third countries that are not part of the EU to demonstrate to the EU members that they are effectively applying those rules to countries outside of the EU. To try to ensure that there's no competition from those countries. So it becomes a competitiveness issue between the EU and also member states, non-member states such as Barbados.
If we have our international business, if we have companies that are either part or registered in a EU territory, does it then mean that they will be keeping their eyes on us and we have to abide by the rules, although we're not necessarily a part of the European Union?
So the issue here is that if you have companies in Barbados that are conducting business within the EU. Maybe they have a contract to provide insurance services with the, to a partner within a, an EU member state. If we are treated as a non-cooperative jurisdiction, then member states in the EU have the ability to do a number of things. Each country will decide with what they're going to do, but they could certainly introduce high withholding taxes on payments to companies in Barbados,
right.
Which then makes us very, very uncompetitive. What happens also is that banks within the EU could refuse to transact business with companies in Barbados, which then makes it very difficult to conduct business internationally. They could also deny a deduction for any payments made to a Barbados entity, even though it is a legal, legitimate, a lawful, legitimate payment, deny deduction to the payer for tax purposes. So it makes it really very difficult for Barbadian companies to conduct business within within Europe.
We have, therefore, the referring to the minister's address to Bieber, he talked about, especially at this time. Now, this has been a battle that's been ongoing for quite some time. My question is, what's been the hindrance? What have we done? What have we not done? And what makes this time particularly distressing for us?
All right, Dennis. Just to go about and try my best to keep it as not technical as possible, so that our listeners can fully understand.
Kevin, is there any way you can improve your the quality of your audio? It's a little low, and I'm trying to make sure that those hear us. Yeah, it's a little bit crackling, but let's try. Go ahead.
Okay, are you hearing me better now?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, good. You're welcome. I was saying I'm going to do my best to keep it as non-technical as possible, so that our listeners can understand what is happening. Right. In this particular instance for which the EU blacklisted us today, they are piggybacking on the rating given to us by the Global Forum out of the OECD. And that rating that we've been given overall is a partially compliant rating. And we've been given that rating because primarily Barbados has not had enough time for the Global Forum to measure how effective we have been in certain changes we made to our legislation. So what must be made up front, clear up front, is that we have no deficiencies in our law, as acknowledged by both the OECD and the EU. In fact, the time frame for which we were reviewed by the Global Forum is a previous time frame from 2015 to 2018. And yes, Barbados, we were supposed to have made certain changes within that time frame. We didn't, but subsequently we have made those changes. And from the Global Forum's perspective, we were rated partially compliant because they needed more time to see how effective we were in managing those changes. So that is what has made this so grievous for us, because the EU is fully aware of that fact, fully aware that we have no deficiencies in our law, and it's just a matter of time to observe us for our effectiveness. And in fact, Prime Minister Motley had made those representations to both the President of the EU Council and to the German Chancellor. Why the German Chancellor? Because Germany is currently holding the presidency of the EU. And what was said to them was, okay, if you want to list us or observe us, put us on the grey list, which means a list of monitoring, so that you can see how we are doing in our effectiveness for the next year. But they have not done that. They have taken the hard-line position that they are going to list us. And certainly, coming now to curtail it into your question, coming at a time where we are struggling in terms of coping with the economic impact of COVID, where our tourism sector has been dealt a huge blow, and our other sector that deals with bringing in our foreign exchange, etc., which is the international business sector, this coming at this time can have severe consequences for us in terms of us and our ability to attract FDI, foreign direct investment, as well as international business companies.
That's Kevin Hunt, the Director of International Business, on the line with us, as well as Ben Arundel, the Special Advisor to the Prime Minister on International Business. And Mr. Hunt also has with him the Deputy Director and the Principal Legal Officer of International Business. We haven't heard from them as yet, but we continue the discussion. The other question I have for the team is this one. The importance of the sector, you mentioned it briefly just now when you talked about the performance of the sector and the importance to the Barbados economy. In his speech, the minister said that despite lowering the tax rate, which was an OECD requirement, there has been an increase in the taxes gained from this sector. Currently, how is that sector performing? Because from time to time we hear, especially when BIBA has its week of activities and they join us here on Brass Tacks for an update, they will tell us that while companies drop off, new companies come on. Where are we with our international business sector, especially in this COVID environment?
Kevin, do you want to start?
We can deal with that together. So Dennis, that assessment is right. We do have companies dropping off, as you put it, and companies coming on. But we are holding our own. In fact, since the change to our regime, our government has introduced something called a foreign currency permit, and that was aimed directly at attracting companies to bring foreign exchange into our country. And even during COVID, we have seen an increase in applications for companies to hold the foreign currency permit. And that is significant because the only qualification that a company must have to hold such a permit is that it must be earning 100% of its income in foreign exchange. So it is entirely heartening that we're seeing an increase in applications from companies request that they have a foreign currency permit. In addition, just before Ben weighs in, we can say that we have seen, even though we've reduced the corporate tax rate, which, by the way, was not an OECD requirement, but the government took that decision in light of certain other decisions that came about because of the enforcement by the OECD for us to remove what was called the ring fence. That's where we had the international business companies. Mm-hmm. But what we have seen is that even though we've reduced the corporate tax rate, we've also seen an increase in the collection of that corporate tax revenue, particularly in the months that we were on lockdown. And so that is also extremely heartening for us that the sector has, you know, come to the fore and held its own, even where tourism is now looking to rebound. And I'll pause there and invite Ben if he wants to weigh in on that.
Sure. Certainly speaking to service providers over the last 2 to 3 months, it's clear to me that business has continued to grow in the sector during this period. So we have many new companies being established. We have, as a result also of an influx of business last year, where companies are now paying tax for the first time. So these are new companies that were established, say, in 2019, and now paying tax in 2020. And so therefore, you have an increase in the corporate tax take from these companies. The other thing is that Kevin mentioned that the fact that we had converged our tax system and reduced the corporate tax rate down to a maximum of 5.5% back in 2018. That has made us competitive. We have not lost business as a result of that because there was an increase, a slight increase of from 2.5 to 5.5 for certain companies within the international business sector. But we have not lost any business as a result of that. But because we have reduced our corporate tax rate across the board, even to those companies that are conducting business locally, then that has made us very competitive, and we have seen an increase in business as a result of that. The other thing is that one of the changes we made was to the insurance regime and the taxation of insurance companies, whereby companies can, if they are conducting third party business, will pay tax at a rate of 2%. Previously, a lot of the companies were actually paying zero tax. So we have a split rate system where some companies, the ones that are conducting business with a related party, pay tax at 0%. Those are paying conducting business with third parties pay tax at 2%. And we're seeing a number of companies that formerly paid zero are now paying 2%. So that also accounts for part of the increase as well.
Okay, we continue with this discussion on the Down to Brass Tacks. We have on the line with us discussing the implications of the blacklisting by the EU of Barbados, Ben Arundel, the Special Advisor to the Prime Minister on International Business, and Kevin Hunt, the Director of International Business. Before we went to the commercial break, Mr. Arundel, you mentioned competition. I want to ask about our competition. Are we competitive? We've heard reports of Caribbean countries promising persons that they can set up businesses within an hour, and everyone's fighting for, you know, to be the most competitive. How competitive are we, and how do we sell our advantages, whatever they may be? If you can highlight some of them for me, either you or Mr. Hunt. I don't know who will take it first, but this whole question of how competitive are we, what our advantages are, and how well we market those advantages.
Okay, so in terms of our competitiveness and how competitive we are, the areas in which we are very competitive is the fact that, first of all, we have a population which is larger than a number of our Caribbean competitors. We have very highly educated people, so we have a workforce that comprises individuals with a high level of education. And so therefore, we are able to support businesses that are established here by providing local employees of a high caliber. A number of the jurisdictions with which we compete in the Caribbean have much smaller populations and therefore have to bring in lots of expats in order to support their international business industry. The other area in which we are very competitive is the fact that now that these countries, including ourselves, have had to introduce economic substance legislation, so that companies established in these jurisdictions, because they're paying low tax or minimal tax, have to demonstrate that they have adequate substance in the jurisdiction in which they're earning these profits. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, the fact that, as I mentioned, Barbados has a much bigger population, we have a much more educated workforce, and we can employ more individuals locally to fill these positions and support these companies, we are less expensive as a jurisdiction overall in which to establish and conduct business. Mm-hmm. So those are some of our competitive elements. I mean, the fact that our rate of tax is, you know, a maximum 5.5 and we go down to 1%, it is sometimes seen as a disadvantage, because if you look at Cayman, for example, Bermuda, Bahamas, BVI, they have zero tax, corporate tax. Mm-hmm. So you would think that would make us uncompetitive, but it doesn't, because the other fact of the matter is that we have double taxation agreements. We have something like about just over 40 agreements at the moment, which gives our investors protection from high withholding tax rates in respect of income that they generate from these countries with which we have those treaties. Mm-hmm. Those other countries do not have double taxation agreements. And so therefore, the type of business that they go after is slightly different to the ones mm-hmm. that we attract.
Okay. The other question I wanted to ask you is on the question of the blacklist. How quickly can it be reviewed? How quickly can we have a change in the blacklist? What's the length of time it usually takes for them to monitor and make the adjustment?
Thank you for that question, Dennis. In this particular instance, the grouping out of the EU that is responsible for coming to decisions and then forwarding those decisions to the EU Council of Ministers, who then either ratify or not. We've had Minister Ronald Topping, who's the Minister of International Business and Industry. He's had dialogue with them, both written dialogue and oral or verbal dialogue. And what has been confirmed by them, by the chair of the Code of Conduct Group, as they're called, is that as soon as Barbados receives the approval from the OECD for a supplementary review, that they would take steps to remove us from this blacklist. We are in the process of continuing the work, and we will be making that request to the OECD Global Forum shortly. And once that is done, we anticipate that at the next EU Council meeting, which will be February 2021, we should be removed from that list. So basically, we are on from now, October, until February, once everything goes as planned.
Does that put us at a peculiar disadvantage during that period? Is there anything that we would consider alarming in the length of time we'll be under review, so to speak, or on the list?
From a reputational point of view, Dennis, it's never good to be on a list. And so that is our concern. Our concern will be some of the things that Ben highlighted earlier in terms of the actions that individuals or being countries can take along with the banks within those countries. What is of interest to note, though, is that we were contacted and we have negotiated with the European Bank and the World Bank that they will not take any punitive or any sanctions against us. They will give us 1 year to get the supplementary done. So if the European Bank can do that and the World Bank, certainly that is why we are reacting so strongly against the move by the European Union. Mm-hmm.
The final question I have for you, gentlemen, and thanks for sharing what you have shared with us, is this. We've had this discussion. We've talked about where we are in the international scheme of things. But the taxi driver who is seeing less income because, you know, or tourism product is on pause because of COVID, or the carpenter or the tradesman saying, look, I'm looking for work, I can't get one, or the young people, the graduates who have, you know, looking for a source of income, finding something that's going to be sustainable. What does all this mean to them? What does all this say to them? What should they take from all this if they say, you know, you guys talking, this don't affect me?
All right. That's again a very good question. First of all, as you would know, Barbados, we are a small jurisdiction. We do not have natural resources to speak of outside of our wonderful population. But what that means is that our currency is not a tradable currency on the international market. Hence, all this talk about foreign currency. And so, in order to purchase some of the very basic of things, including you mentioned the taxi driver. So even in, for companies to purchase the vehicles to bring in to resell, require us to have foreign currency. And so this affects every single Barbadian, because if we do not have the ability to attract that foreign exchange, we do not have the ability to purchase goods and commodities as we need them from off of the international market. It affects every Barbadian, because when we have the companies that come here, and Ben spoke about substance, and they Some of them move their families here, etc. All of that, how they're treated here, how they're treated in the gas station, their experience in the bank, their experience in Broad Street, Swan Street, all of that feeds into us developing that good reputation as a jurisdiction of choice. And that is what we want to be known as, a jurisdiction of choice. So from the basic attaining of our goods and commodities to every Barbadian citizen playing his or her part in making sure that we are a jurisdiction that people would love to come to, not only to do business, but to settle down, to bring their children, to integrate their children into our educational system, etc. It affects each and every one of us. Ben, I don't know if you have anything you want to add there.
No, I think I just want to add to what you've just said in terms of the importance of these companies and the contributions that they make to the foreign currency situation in Barbados, because we tend to focus on the amount of taxes that they pay. I mean, that's important, yes. It's also important because those taxes are paid in foreign currency. The other thing, of course, is that, as Kevin has mentioned, that they employ Barbadians, and those Barbadians are paid in foreign currency. Even if they bring expats in, and those expats are paid here, they're paid in foreign currency, and those expats pay taxes in Barbados, again, typically in foreign currency. And I think also the number of jobs that's created and the kind of jobs that are created. Those jobs are not created by the tourism industry, because the tourism industry, the type of jobs that provides is not necessarily of the same caliber as the types of jobs that's created by the international business sector, because these are very high-paying jobs, highly skilled jobs, and complements our high education system. So I think the other thing that is also forgotten is the fact that these companies typically have to have their board meetings in Barbados, because they have to demonstrate that they are resident here. So they have their board meetings, they have local directors attending, but they also have directors from overseas who fly into Barbados. And those people stay here 2-3 days, maybe sometime.
I seem to have lost Ben there longer.
Spend. And that is also an important factor that we should take into account. The fact that tourism is generated by the international business sector.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us and sharing that information with us. We continue to...
You're still muted, Dennis, so we can't still hear what you're saying.
Okay, good. I just want to say thank you for sharing with us. And
Dennis, you're muted.
Hello? Okay, we seem to have...
Yep, okay.
Okay, right. You got me now. Okay, right. I just wanted to say thank you for joining us on the program and sharing the information with us. And should you have any further information to share at any time,
and Dennis,
welcome the good news. Yes, sir. Hello?
Hi, Dennis. We missed you. You were muted.
Okay. My producer tells me I'm now unmute, so I hope you can hear me.
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, good. I wanted to thank you, and let me try for the third time. I want to thank you for joining us and sharing with us. And if there is further information, we hope good and not bad. We look forward to hearing from you again. And Biba in particular, I know you celebrate your week of activities and you usually keep the public abreast of what's happening in the international business sector with our tourism industry, let me say, on pause. We are hoping that you give us at least a little breathing space and that the lifeline continues to pump the much needed finance into our system, because we need all the help we can get.
Agreed, Dennis. Thank you. And I just want to say that if persons want to have more information, if there are people out there with companies, etc., you can call us at the ministry at 535-7200, or you can call Invest Barbados as well at 626-2000.
Thank you very much. And on the line, Ben Arendelle and Kevin Hunt. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Good morning, and thank you for being patient and staying with us on the Tuesday edition. I know some of the callers will not be there now, so we'll go down the line until we find one. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you are on.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me properly?
Clearly, yeah.
Okay. The discussion caught me off guard. What it was calling about really was in relation more or less to the health situation. I heard the Minister of Health saying this morning that ideally he would like to test the whole population, but it wasn't feasible. And unfortunately, I don't think he was quite right on that particular account. While listening to the BBC some night ago, I think it was a gentleman from Africa. They were actually doing bulk testing, more or less. In this particular case, what he did was actually compile, let's say you had maybe 100 samples to test. What they would do is test the whole batch. If it were positive, then what they would have done is divide them up into two sections. They would, let's say, divide the 100 into 250, and they would test one, and if that was positive, they would test the other one, and if there was a positive in that, then they would have to divide the 250s into 25s, and they would test the quarters then until they remain no more positives in the particular batch that they were doing. And what would account for the saving is that instead of having to test all 100 individually...
You're doing a sample testing, you mean?
Right. So he was saying that they were actually devising this method because it proved to be a very cost-effective system. And as far as I can see, when the Chinese actually had the second outbreak in Wuhan, where the original outbreak started, they did a mass testing of everybody in the particular city, and they'd actually locked it down, so you couldn't actually leave until the mass testing was done. But what
you have any idea what the cost of those mass testings or those sample testings are? What's the cost of the test kit and how many they have? Because that too could determine what you do.
Well, the BBC gave two interesting accounts on different appraisals. What one was done is to test the sewer system to see the level of the virus in the actual sewer samples that they took. And that was more or less a community-wide
you see. Way of doing. No, this is it. This is why I asked the question I asked it. Got a message here saying the minister did not say that. He said he would like to test everyone who comes into the island. And this is the person who did the program that's telling me this, okay? No, let me say this to you.
He did say he ideally would like to test everybody. I heard him say that, definitely.
Sir, the person who had the minister with him said to me, the minister said he would like to test everybody that came into Barbados. It was about cost effectiveness. That's the person who hosted the program who said so to me.
But I'm telling you that the guy said, ideally, he would like, if he could have, test everybody.
So, well, maybe you heard something that the host did not hear. So I will leave it as he heard and you heard. Let me say this to you, however. The question is, if you have community spread, do you test the community? If you have incoming persons and you want to prevent community spread, you want to prevent persons coming in, spreading the virus, you then test the people coming in. So you can't measure what happened in China or what happened in Africa with what's happening in Barbados, because in those places, what was identified was community spread, so they tested the community. If you do not have incidents of community spread and you've contained the virus and you're seeing the identifying of the virus as those coming in, then what you do is you concentrate on those coming in to ensure that it does not get into the community. You may, I suppose, continue parallel testing or spot testing or whatever, but it comes down to what's the most effective way of using the test kits you have the cost of widespread testing and how do you continue to keep your population safe. Barbados has determined that to do that, it needs to, one, isolate the person who's tested positive, to quarantine those who are pending a test, and asking the population to cooperate by washing hands, wearing masks, and avoiding interacting with people in an unsafe environment. That's getting too close to them, shouting and screaming, and droplets flying all over the place if you're not sure whether the person's infected or not. Right. That's the path they've chosen to go.
Okay, if you're going to have the population compliant with everything that you lay out, all well and good, but it is not happening. One of the other things I wanted to draw to the public's attention is that we were having our Baiko ice cream manufactured in Suriname, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had noticed on the BBC News is that they were saying there was a fairly high incidence of the epidemic in Suriname as well. So I'm just wondering if perhaps in handling something like ice cream, whether or not somebody who is not symptomatic could actually, in the process of the manufacture, perhaps transmit the germs into the product. And considering that you're going to have this thing on cold storage, the chances are that...
So you have medical information on this?
No, I'm saying that when
Sir, just answer my question. Do you have medical information that says it can be frozen in ice cream? That's what I'm asking.
No, I'm saying that okay. This first was being spoken about here locally as far as the effects
Sir, will you please not repeat what you've said? Because I'm asking if there's medical evidence that it can be frozen in ice cream. And you said no, so thank you. That's all.
No, what I'm saying to you is
Sir, I hear what you're saying to me. You're not hearing what I'm saying to you.
I understand what you're saying. What I'm telling you is that the discussion was how long it would last on different surfaces.
Right.
But nobody ever related to the fact that it can be preserved.
And do you have medical evidence that it can?
But viruses are kind of inert.
This has been called a unique virus. I am just asking you if you have medical evidence that it can be preserved, especially in ice cream. And you answered that question? And you've answered that question?
I expect it can be. One of the things
you expect. Okay. Sir, are you a medical professional?
No.
Then, sir, don't presume. Don't do it on air. It's not... Look, let me try to explain this in a way that does not come across... I'm told, you know, that I don't have to be, I try real hard. I'm sounding aggressive, and I'm trying not to sound aggressive. So I'm trying real hard, because apparently the way I speak upsets people. Sir, one of the things the radio station has to do, in addition to trying to preserve person's reputation by not allowing people to defame it, is to not allow unsubstantiated rumors, hearsay, and other things to be spread across the airwaves. It is called being irresponsible. And I'm trying hard to not let you do it. I've given you about 5 occasions to back away from what you're doing, and you have not. So I will respectfully terminate the conversation. And have a good morning. The radio station has a responsibility to its license to do certain things. We recently saw in the newspaper that the current broadcast authority raised the issue of us playing certain types of programs that say they can miraculously cure people. That is against the license, and they're looking at it, and it's not in the best interest of the station to just say the views of this do not reflect the views of the station. That disclaimer does not work. So, to try to protect the station from accusations that we are allowing rumor, hearsay, and fear-mongering, I am trying my best not to allow it to happen when I sit in this chair or when I sit in the other one as the producer. That's all they're trying to do. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Brother Nasser, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm fine, sir.
And the family, everybody good?
Yep.
Good. I called, so I hear you discussing with a lady today on the program, the university, right? And I want to say something here about this country and education. But I'm going to call some, as I told, I'm going to call some outstanding men. I can't find a place for them because, and then there was a young sister. I had to function with the fellas that stand to function with me, and the girls weren't coming. But I want to say that the university today is letting down this country and its development with the students, with the graduates that they're standing out of the university. I want to say what I mean by that. And my dear coming up, as a youngster, there are some outstanding men. I know there were women too, but we used to deal with the men that came out of the university that used to put their life and their education online to improve the quality of black people in this country. And I'm not afraid to say that. You had men like Michael Allenby, Robert Fowler, Bobby Morris, Raul Chase, Rudy Gibbons, Courtney Blackman. Oh, I know some is sir, so I think Courtney Blackman is sir. Brian Griffith, outstanding to the core. Beaumont Banfield and Insurance used to be around all the place with the other Sharp Insurance advising us to buy insurance. And a lot of us should have been doing it in the day. We might be drawing some $20,000 and $30,000 today. Joey Harper, I don't think he went to university, but a man again up there educating the people all the time. So Kenneth Hewitt, a giant, but these are men, young men that left university working their own business, working people, and all they used to do is suspend their life and making sure that fellas like me that they went nowhere near university had the privilege to be taught and trained and used to come and do our books and do all kind of work and give us advice. You had Ricardo Blackman, another giant for a man in this country. I'm sure he's still alive. You also had Bishop, a fellow from England named Mr. Bishop from England. Then you had an Indian guy named Mr. Yassin. He used to be manager of Barbados National Bank. Always there trying to make sure that he can make assistance to black people in this country. Then you had Curly King, a genius, that no question about that. Again, then you had Lawton Weeks, Lawton Walker. Lawton Walker also was a manager of Barbados National Bank. There are a whole set more. But the point I'm making that in those days, those men were doing their work, but they're used to spend the time trying to make sure that they improve the knowledge of average Barbadian people like me so we could go forward and tell them manage and have big businesses. Big companies employ a lot of people. Today, what we find out, most of these people are really looking for a job or they're looking for a white company that they get a job in. They do not do things to give, for me to know, well, not me, I pass that stage, not going, they must never go to the university with knowledge I don't have. But the point is that they're not there anymore. If you don't see these young people and take on your version that develop their own business and so doing things anymore to move our talented black people forward. And this is the one of the problems that we are having also. So the university is a big, pretty word. Brilliant minds coming over there about what are they doing. We have to ask ourselves, when are we going to wake up and understand that we need these university graduates to come out. I mean, when you go into business, they don't have to just left for you and come to court. But anyway, you and them, everybody owe them a lot of money, but they used to get paid sometimes, but they used to never get paid sometimes too, but that was not the point. The point is that they developed some highly technical women and men in this country. And I want to say something else too. Today, you have a country where our people is in need of knowledge. No, by the way, these people are top academics. But these today are people in need of knowledge. And what we're getting now, doctors charging through the hill for operations, lawyers overcharging for work. All these professionals that are black are taking this country and running it aside by overemphasizing prices for poor people in this country and taking the semi-middle class and turning them poor. And taking the middle class, I'm turning semi-middle class because the kind of money that you have to pay today and they don't want, we want to get vexed, to get vexed. But the truth is that we have to sit down and analyze what is going on in this country. And the doctors got to adjust the prices when they're dealing with the middle class people in this country. And the lawyers got to do that too.
So I want to tell you, right, that perhaps my experience, I know people may say it's because I'm Dennis Johnson, but I was Dennis Johnson before I was Dennis Johnson. I'll be Dennis Johnson after I'm Dennis Johnson. I know doctors who have done medical work for free. Can't say, I know lawyers who have done legal work for free too. There are people who assist without letting it be known that they assist. Our feeling is that the people who have abused the opportunities they've had, the persons who have turned their backs on those who they've encountered along the way, those who have stepped on the hands of those who helped them up, are highlighted more often than those that are not. And therefore, the whole system is tainted by those who do. I saw a member of the legal profession making a comment that young lawyers want to live a lawyer lifestyle. Well, I would love to know what a lawyer lifestyle is. If they did not see other lawyers doing it, they would have no impression that there was something called a lawyer lifestyle. The other thing is that people make assumptions about you without knowing what you do or what you are. And they do it based on the way you carry yourself. So if you don't go around begging people or asking for favors, or you're snobbish, you're antisocial, you're a wealthy man, you're a millionaire. And they make those determinations and they project it onto others. I want to just advise people that I have reports coming in from various places of flooding, from places in the city to the outskirts into the, what we used to call the countryside. I'm not going to call it that. I'm going to call it the northern part of the island. Please be aware that there's a warning in effect. Someone's asking whether it's not a good time to send the children home from school into the flooded areas, or should we wait until the flood subsides? You see, when we don't send them to school, we're wrong. When we send them to school, take them out of school because it's raining. We can't seem to make up our minds how to handle our children's education. But that's another subject for when the rain stops, apparently. This is Down to Brass Tacks.